When you talk about goals, I love the story of Jean-Henri Fabre, the great French naturalist. He conducted a series of experiments with some processionary caterpillars, so named because they follow each other in a procession. He lined them around a flower pot until they formed a never-ending circle. He put some pine needles in the center of the flower pot, that is the food of the processionary caterpillar. They started going round and round and round, 24 hours a day, 48 hours in a 2 day, 72 hours, and then they kept going on and on for 7 full days and 7 full nights. They went round and round and round until they literally dropped dead from starvation and exhaustion. With an abundance of their favorite food less than 6 inches away, they'd starve to death because they confused activity with accomplishment. A lot of people do exactly the same thing. I don't know where you live, but I can tell you something about your town. And I can tell you about somebody who's in the same business that you are. Some of them are doing exceptionally well, and some of them are not doing good at all. And I don't care what that business is. It's not the location. It is not our abilities. But basically, it is because of our thinking and our direction that definitely is going to make the difference. There are so many people, you see, who never really get those directions in life. You've seen them in every company. They will come in and you watch them all day long. They're almost hyper. They're here and they're there and they're everywhere else. I mean, they're busy, busy, busy. But at the end of the day, you will still see a full desk and no evidence that they've accomplished anything, because they really don't have direction. The most outstanding example of goal setting that I have ever heard of has to do with the Japanese. In 1950, a war-torn, devastated Japan, a nation which had lost a higher percentage of its young men to war than any nation in the last 100 years, cities had been bombed out. They have no real natural resources. They have no iron ore. They have no coal. They have no oil. But in 1950, the leaders of government and business and industry got together. And they said, let's set a goal. Let's become the number one nation in the world in the production of textiles during the 1950s. And they made it. In 1960, they set the impossible goal. And that was to become the number one nation in the world in the production of steel. Now, in order to do that, they've got to build the steel mills. They've got to import the iron ore from thousands of miles away. They've got to import the coal and the oil from thousands of miles away. They've got to manufacture the steel. Then they've got to ship it thousands of miles to its market and undersell its competition. Impossible. But the Japanese, in this case, did not look at what they did not have. They looked at what they did have, a willingness to work. And they worked hard. They reached their goal. In 1970, they set another goal. They said, during this decade, let's become the number one nation in the world in the production of automobiles. They missed it by 1 year. It took them until 1980, when their plant became the largest and number one producer of automobiles in the world. In 1980, they set another goal. They said, during this decade, let's become number one in the production of electronics and computers. And all you've got to do is go to Videoland. And all you've got to do is look at the computer world today, and you can see exactly what they are doing. Because goals do work, whether it's for the individual, the family, or the company, or the nation, I'm absolutely convinced that we have a real threat. Unless we have our goals more firmly in place, and that is to remain strong, so we will remain free. Goals absolutely work. I love the story of Sir Edmund Hillary. You might have heard it. Sir Edmund Hillary, you know, was the first man to scale Mount Everest, the tallest mountain in the whole world. Can you imagine him climbing down off that mountain? And one reporter comes up to him and said, tell me, Sir Edmund, how'd you climb the tallest mountain in the whole world? How did you do it? Do you think for one moment, he said, well, I was just out walking around. Can you imagine the chairman of the board, General Motors? Somebody comes to him and said, how'd you get to be the chairman of the board for General Motors? And he said, well, I just showed up for work, and they started promoting me, and here I am, the chairman of the board for General Motors. Can you imagine The coach of an NFL football team, Landry, for example, calling the Cowboys together one Saturday afternoon and saying, "Fellas, now, you know we're going to play them Washington Redskins tomorrow. That's a pretty tough bunch. We better think of something to do." You see, that's absurd. It's ridiculous. They will spend hours and hours and hours planning a football game. And yet we don't plan the most important events in our life. Too many Americans spend more time planning the wedding than they spend planning the marriage. Too many people spend more time planning on how to get the job than they spend on how to becoming productive and successful in that job. You gotta have goals. J.C. Penney expressed it this way: "Give me a stunt clerk with a goal, and I'll give you someone who will make history." But he said, "You give me someone without a goal, and I will give you a stock clerk." You gotta have goals, that's for sure. I don't know if the name Howard Hill rings a bell with you or not. Howard Hill was a good Alabama boy, and he was an archer. He entered 286 archery tournaments. He placed first 286 times. He killed a Cape buffalo, the toughest game animal alive to bring down. He killed it with a bow and arrow. He killed a Bengal tiger with a bow and arrow. He killed a lot of game animals with a bow and arrow. As a youngster, I have seen newsreels of Howard Hill from a distance of 50 feet, where he would literally split the bullseye dead center, and then he would take the next arrow and split that dead center. An incredible demonstration of skill. He killed an 18-foot shark under 15 feet of water. Or was it a 15-foot shark under 18 feet of water? I know it was a great big one in his way down there. I do know that. Howard Hill was an incredible marksman. Now, I have never shot the bow and arrow professionally, but I am an instructor par excellence. That means I'm good. That means I'm real good. As a matter of fact, I am so good as an instructor that I could take anyone in this live audience this evening, or anyone who will ever hear this recording, and if your eyesight is good and your health is good, I could spend 20 minutes with any one of you, and at the end of the 20 minutes, I would have you hitting the bullseye more consistently than Howard Hill could have hit it the best day he ever had. Provided, of course, we had first blindfolded Howard Hill. And turn him around a couple of times so he'd have no idea which direction he was facing. And you kind of snicker to yourself, especially those, I imagine, who are listening to this recording, as you say to yourself, "Well, Zegler, that's true, of course, but it sure is a silly example. Why, how on earth could anybody possibly hit a target they couldn't even see?" That's a pretty good question. Here's one even better. How can you hit a target you don't even have? Have you got your targets? Have you written them down? Have you spelled out the details of why you want to reach those goals in the first place? Have you identified the obstacles you have to overcome in order to get there? See, something stands between what you've got and what you want. If there was nothing between you and your goals, then you'd already be there. You got to find out what those obstacles are. Have you spelled out what you need to know to reach your goals? Have you identified the people, the groups, and the organizations you need to work with in order to get there? Have you devised a specific plan of action in order to get there? And finally, have you put the date on it? Now, the fourth reason that most people don't have goals basically is because they don't know how. I'm going to give you some bad news and some good news, and as you know, you're going to get the bad news first. I mean, I'm not going to give you a choice. You get the bad news first. The bad news is this: if you really get involved in this goal-setting process, it will take you somewhere between 10 and 20 hours to really set your goals. If you really have a complex set of goals, it might take you 30 hours to set your goals. That's another reason so many people never do really set them, because that is a tremendous time investment. Now, that's the bad news. Two bits of good news that go with it. On the absolute authority of several years of personal experience, and the experience of many, many people who've been doing this, I can assure you that once you have set those goals properly, you will have created for yourself an additional 3 to as many as 10 hours every week of your life for the rest of your life. Let me say it again. When you discipline yourself to do the things you ought to do, when you ought to do them, the day will come when you can do the things you want to do when you want to do them. The good news is this will give you an awful lot of time to pursue the things which you have a real interest. It will give you control of your time and your activities and your future. The rest of the good news is this. When you learn how to set one goal, you'll know how to set all goals. When you learn how to set a physical goal, you'll also know how to set a mental, a spiritual, a social, a family, a career, and a financial goal. Because there's a procedure. There's a formula for setting all of them. If you can figure out the answer to what 12 times 12 is, you can also figure out what the answer to 2,865 times 9,412 is. If you know the formula, you can come up with the answer. Now, to get you started on goals, let me share a little story with you, which I believe is significant. You see, I think as I tell this story and use this example, I think everybody ought to write a book. I don't necessarily believe you ought to get the book published or make any effort to get it published, but you ought to write a book. And I'll tell you what the title ought to be, what I think you ought to do to get the most out of life. Let me make a strong statement. If my book, See You at the Top, which has now sold 2 million copies counting foreign editions, if this book had never sold a single copy, I would still say this is the most profitable thing that I have ever done, if it had never sold a single copy. Now, I'm not only talking about standard of living, but I'm also talking about quality of life when I make that statement. You see, this book really ought to be entitled, What I Think You Ought to Do to Get the Most Out of Life. As I was writing this book, I realized what I was doing was I was clarifying my thinking about what life was all about. For the first time, I really discovered what I believed, what I felt was important, and the research uncovered a number of things that I already believed but I'd never been able to articulate. The title of your book ought to be What I Think You Ought to Do to Get the Most Out of Life. I want to share information about this because I believe this is a classic example about what goal setting and goal reaching is all about. When I started writing this, the first words I wrote were, you can go where you want to go, you can do what you want to do, you can be like you want to be. Well, as I looked at those words, I kind of got to talking to myself, which incidentally, I hasten to add, is perfectly all right. I was on a program with Dr. Joyce Brothers, and she said, scientifically speaking, they have proved that people who talk to themselves are above average in intelligence. So, if you've been talking to yourself, just be about it. It's perfectly all right. I'd like to express a personal opinion. That's all it is, personal opinion. I believe it's all right to answer. But if you ever catch yourself saying, huh? You got a problem. I caught myself saying, huh? Because I noticed I was holding the words I'd written way out there because there was a 41-inch waistline between me and the book and well over 200 pounds of Ziegler. And the thought occurred to me that one of these days I'd be bumping into one of you slender guys or gals and I could visualize you coming up to me and saying, Ziegler, you believe all that stuff you write? And I was going to say, of course I do. Then I could visualize you saying, do you believe it all? And I was going to say, well, of course I do. Then I could imagine you poking your finger in that 41-inch waistline and saying, Ziegler, do you believe it all? Then I was going to say, well, you know us authors, we do take a little literary license every once in a while. Ziegler, is that your fancy way of saying you lied about it? Now, hold the phone, friend. Don't call me a liar. People don't like liars. Well, you're at least a hypocrite then, man. Don't call me a hypocrite. People sure don't like hypocrites. I know you know that a hypocrite is a person who simply is not himself on Sunday. As a matter of fact, you know, I've had a lot of people say, well, the only reason I don't go to church is nothing but a bunch of hypocrites down there. Of course, I always tell them, friend, don't let that stop you. Come on down. we got room for one more. Like I've had people say, well, I'd read the Bible, but I don't understand it. Of course, I don't think it's the part they don't understand that bothers them. Actually, the Bible is pretty clear. I bet you noticed it didn't call them the 10 suggestions. Well, anyhow, I had to make a decision. I had to decide either to take those words out of the book or I had to do something about me. Well, my boy was 8 years old, and I've always felt that a father ought to be able to spank his children until they get to be at least 12. At the rate we were going, I wasn't even going to be able to catch mine, much less spank him, so I knew something had to be done. But the straw that broke the camel's back, the redhead kept telling me to hold my stomach in, and I already was. So I knew I had to do something. Went down to see Dr. Cooper at Cooper Clinic of aerobics fame. You know, he wrote the books. They've sold over 15 million copies in a jumpteen number of foreign languages. I went down for the examination. First thing they did was took 2 quarts of my blood. Well, it looked like 2 quarts. They filled so many vials, I thought they were opening a branch of the blood bank right then and there. Then they dunked me in a tank of water 3 times. The purpose of that was to determine the percentage of body fat I had. When I got through, they told me I was 23 9/10% pure lard. Then they put me on the treadmill. And on the treadmill, you know, you walk and you walk and you walk and you walk. And the longer you can walk, the better your physical condition. The worst possible condition was horrible. I just made up my mind, I'm going to stay on it until I at least get into just awful. And I made it by 4 seconds. When they finished the examination, Dr. Martin, the examining physician, called me in and he said, Mr. Ziegler, you'll be delighted to know that we've run all of these figures through the computer. And you, sir, are actually not overweight. I said, well, that's fantastic. However, he said, according to the computer, you're exactly 5 1/2 inches too short. And I said, well, Doc, that's pretty bad, isn't it? He said, no. He said, actually, you're in remarkably good shape for a 66-year-old. I said, Doc, I'm 46. He said, you're in awful shape. Says, as a matter of fact, if you were a building, I'd condemn you. And I said, well, Doc, what can I do? And he whipped out a sheet of paper thicker than my book to start telling me what I could do. And I tell you, he told me lots more than I wanted to know. I got home, and Redhead said, well, I suppose you're going to be out running all over the neighborhood. And I said, yes, I am. Well, he said, if I'm going to have a 46-year-old fat boy running all over the place, I got to get you looking as good as I can. So she went down to the store and bought me some fancy running shirts and shorts, and I'd already gotten the shoes the doctor had recommended. Oh, and I did something else, and it was very ugly. But I had not read Ann Landers at the time, and I'm going to use that as my excuse. You know, Ann Landers said you should not steal pages out of other folks' magazines. There was a magazine at Dr. Cooper's office. Now, it was an old magazine. It had an advertisement in there for jockey shorts. And I don't know if you folks read the jockey short ads or not, but if you don't read them, the next time you see one, you should at least look at the picture. You'll find out in a hurry, they don't put jockey shorts on fat boys. At least they don't have a good year. And so I took that picture out and I pasted it on my bathroom mirror and I said, now there's my hero. That's the way I'm going to look right there. Well, the next morning, the opportunity clock sounded off bright and early. Negative people, you know, call them alarm clocks. I rolled out of bed, I put on my fancy running outfit, hit the front door, and I ran a block. Did better the next day, though. I ran a block in a mailbox. And the next day I ran a block in 2 mailboxes, and a block in 3, and a block in 4. One day I ran all the way around the block, came back in, woke the whole family up and said, guess what Dad has done? Then one day I ran a half a mile, then a mile, then a mile and a half, then 2, then 3, then 4, then 5. The weight started coming down from 202 to 165. The waistline fell to 34. A lot of times people have said, yeah, but I'll bet you were dieting religiously all that time. That is partially true because I did quit eating in church. Tried a 30-day diet and lost a month. Incidentally, for those who want to lose weight, and I know it sounds like I'm trying to get everybody to go on a diet, that is not my purpose for this crowd this evening, though there are 5 of you who should. Now there are about 65 of you who wonder who the other 4 are. But anyhow, for those of you who want to know about weight loss. Let me give you four fast little tips to lose weight. Number one, and probably the most important, stay away from cottage cheese. Now, a lot of people don't realize this, but cottage cheese is the most fattening food in existence. Now, understand, I have no scientific evidence of this or proof, but the evidence is so compelling, I know I'm right. Because as I've traveled all over the world, I've noticed it is internationally true that don't nothing but fat folks eat the stuff. So stay away from cottage cheese. Number two, get a thorough examination. This is on the serious side. Get a thorough examination from your skinny doctor. Now, if he's not slender, that means he doesn't believe in the importance of taking that care of his body, and he or she are not going to be very persuasive as far as their dealing with you is concerned. Get a thorough physical from a doctor who believes in what he's doing. The third thing is this. If the doctor starts to give you a prescription, do not walk out on the doctor, run out on the doctor. You didn't gain the weight taking pills, and you're not going to permanently lose the weight by taking the pills. Now, I'm going to make a claim which I could not prove in 10,000 years, but I honestly believe it's the truth. I believe that more people have lost more weight and kept it off as a result of listening to these recordings and reading See You at the Top than have ever lost on 99.9% of all of the diet books ever written. You see, diet really and weight is not really the problem. That simply is the manifestation of the problem. The fourth thing is if you get a negative doctor, swap him off for a positive doctor. Now, what's a negative doctor? Basically, it's a doctor that always tells you what you can't eat. You can't have this, leave that alone, don't touch that. Man, stay away from this. What they're really saying is now, if you like it, you can't have it. If you don't like it, eat all you want. That basically is what they boil down to. The thing I loved about Dr. Martin was the fact that he was so positive. I've never seen a more positive doctor. He is a slender young guy, runs in the Boston Marathon, does the good things. Dr. Martin said to me, Mr. Ziegler, you're going to be delighted to know that you can eat anything you want. He said, I have prepared a list of what you are going to want. People often say to me, Ziegler, what can't you eat? I don't know what I can't eat. Why should I clutter up my mind with a bunch of stuff can't have anyhow? I can tell you that I can eat lots of chicken. I can eat lots of fish. I can eat fruits and vegetables and salads. I can eat, on occasion, good lean roast beef. I can eat just about anything that I want to eat. An exercise to keep the weight off permanently is the key. In December, I injured my back, for example, and there was a two-month span that I could not jog, and I picked up 8 pounds. See, my body retains ice cream. But when you put them together, the diet and the exercise, now we're on the right track. There are four reasons people don't have goals. One is because of fear. The second one is because of their self-image. The third one is they've never been sold, and the fourth one is they do not know how.